And we're back. Here we are again for another episode, a special Christmas edition of Scots Radio. And the last in for this year. Dinna ken about other folk, but to me this has been enough a quick year. I mind fun we had just started this in. We were camping out in our temporary studio down the road. Now we're back home again. We nae in, but twa new babies in the Scots Radio family. We've got twa new dads on the team. Let me introduce the first in, our resident folklorist and resident rumbler, Steve Byrne, father of Matilda, born in February. How's Matilda getting on?
She's doing grand. She just started the nursery, so.
Oh, great. And our very own soon sorter, Richie Werner, new dad, big congratulations, father of Helena May, born the 7th of November, to Richie and Louisa Werner. Coming number two, our Richie Werner. Is Helena Dean okay?
She's great. If it's the middle of the day like it is now, she'll be sound asleep. I can guarantee you that.
So the message there is you haven't had a lot of sleep.
No.
Anything can happen here, Steve.
Fit sleep, aye.
Christmas and the babies, aye. We've got a couple of special Christmas readings about a baby arriving in a manger. That's later in the programme. Ian for Shetland and another for Aberdeenshire for the Doric Bible. And we hear about the Buchan Field Club, one of the oldest clubs in the country. We join a farmer for Fife and a comedy club in Edinburgh. And I'm in the kitchen of food writer and chef Wendy Barry for the Good Food Guide, sampling the trifle and hearing about a new Scottish cookbook just in time for Christmas Day. And on that book theme, congratulations to Michael Faber winning the Psalter Book of the Year last night at the Psalter Society Literary Awards. The book was called Book of Strange New Things. Lovely. So to this programme, I start with the president of the Buchan Field Club, Sandy May. I had the honour of being the guest speaker at their AGM and dinner recently. Now, the Buchan Field Club is one of the oldest in Scotland, and before the folk arrived, I took the opportunity to ask Sandy a bit more about the history of the club.
It's just a club, but it started back in 1887 by a chap called James Spence. Were mostly lawyers and doctors and ministers.
But
and
fit were the speaking about? Fit was their interests?
Well, the all kinds of interests, really just about anything there was. The natural science, archaeology, folklore, history and literature. Just anything in local studies, really.
So they gathered round about here or in different buildings round about here?
Peterhead, mostly, aye.
And they had a guest speaker or somebody would get up and speak about just what I'm going to be doing later on this evening. And did they hate to have some sort of qualification to join the club?
No qualification at all. They paid a small fee, and students were they didn't have to pay a fee, or they paid a small fee later on, I think. Mm-hmm. But a lot of very eminent people were in this club. And at one time in the 30s, there was up to about 200 people in it.
Give us an idea if I was in the club.
Some of the early ones, there was Professor Peter Giles. He actually came from Strachan, come a humble background, but he became Chancellor of Emmanuel College in Cambridge, and he wrote many, many books, including Ian in the Doric about the mother tongue. There was a chap, John Gray, he worked in the patents office in London, and Professor William Mill, he was a professor of mathematics in Leeds.
Did they come up by train or something? They
were all local loons had been, mm-hmm. and they just moved on, and what they really did was, they're all past presidents of the club, and the just jumped on the sleeper in London or whatever, up to Aberdeen, on the train, out to Peterhead, into the Palace Hotel, and they had their dinner with other pals and had a news, did their paper, maybe back on the sleeper and back home again.
And
it was just no bothering them because all the villages was linked. It was just, a way of life. A lot of them still had folks up here, like mm-hmm. a Peter Giles' mother, I bid in Strachan, so he probably did a visit at the same time, Wales.
Was there a kind of a feeling that they had to try and improve themselves or communicate something, some way?
I don't think it was so much improving themselves. It was just because most of these people were...
Improved already.
Aye, and they were very academic, and they were... They had hobbies that maybe involved archaeology or whatever. So they were doing all that kind of stuff on a way. So they were just passing on this knowledge. That's really what it was about, passing on knowledge to others.
And Gavin Gregg, of course, the folks on Collector, he was a president in this club.
Yes, he was a president during the 25th. He organised the 25th celebration at the club. Another person you'd probably know, Charles Murray.
The poet?
Yes, he was in the field club. On the 50th anniversary, it was already in 35mm film. So I've just recently managed to get a hold of this 35mm film. It's a silent movie, a bit like a Charlie Chaplin stuff.
All right.
But all these people are in it, Lord and Lady Aberdeen and Charles Murray and... A lot of people came out to Peterhead. It starts in Aberdeen.
So
all the guys in the train.
What date was this, Sunday?
In 1937.
Aye. God, that's a treasure, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is. In fact, I was looking to get it into the Scottish Archives because I'm sure they'd be fine pleased to hear it. I hadn't done nothing about it yet, but I'll let you sort that out.
Well, what do you expect in a wee the next, though? I mean, my topic is language of the land. I mean... Is it a difficult crowd to please?
I'm sure they're not.
Am I going to be heckled?
No, I wouldn't think that. We've had many speakers over the years, and as you'd imagine, the amount of talks we've had is into hundreds and hundreds, over 128 years, remember?
Aye.
So I don't think you'll have any problem in that,
Peter. I'm honoured, Sandy. But I want to say very much about it until I'm finished and see what you think, anyway.
I was going to say as well that a lot of these papers were all putting into the transactions, as we call them, were all bound into volumes. There's 18 volumes, and it's a massive history of the local area.
But that's fantastic. I have to say, I'm thoroughly looking forward to it, a bit nervous kind, as you can well imagine. But how long do I have to speak for?
About an hour or thereabouts.
Just an hour, right. Apprehension, but on behalf of Scots Radio, thank you for inviting me to do this. As I said, it's a great honour.
Nae bother ava, and it's fine to see you back here in Buchan.
Sandy May, President of the Buchan Field Club. And thank you to Sandy and his committee for their hospitality. It was a special night, and we got all the technology to work. It was a miracle. Steve, we'd have loved this company. And you've been looking at some of the information about the Buchan Field Club. What did you come up with?
We were just saying it's amazing the activity they've been into, as I've been saying, 18 volumes between 1987 and 1989.
Amazing.
And... one of the things that interests me, of course, the name, when you said you were going to speak for them, a light bulb went on in my head because Gavin Gregg's collecting the songs were put together, and a lot of folk doesn't ken necessarily that folk kens the modern Greg Duncan collection that was done in the 1980s through to 2002, but in 1925, the Buchan Field Club put out an edition edited by Alexander Keith called Last Leaves of Traditional Ballads and Balladeers. And that was the big muckle songs, the child ballads that Gavin Gregg had collected. Of course, he'd been dead about 10 years by that time. And Alexander Keith published that through the club. And it was a massive publication.
Maybe I'm imagined this, but some way I read that this book was presented to Hamish Henderson, the folks on Collector Hamish Henderson, when he visited the Northern Hotel up in Aberdeen. And he was 18 weeks, that more or less started him collecting songs and singers, and maybe led to the discovery of Jeannie Robinson. So the last leaves, the Buchan Field Club, it's all giant.
Indeed, aye. And I ken that Hamish kent Alexander Keith for a while. They corresponded for a while, and they got to ken, obviously, about the Gregg and Duncan manuscripts in Aberdeen University. So that certainly would have played a role, I imagine.
It could be true, that wee story. But fitting him. important establishment that is, the Buckenfield Club. And as I said, thank you to Abdi for the hospitality. It was, and I survived speaking for an hour. And did I say that's really near problem to you speaking for an hour? I can just see you building up to that. No, this is for the new album for Anna Massey and Merritt Green called Best Day. This is Musical Flowers. Massey and Merritt Green from the new album Best Day. And we have a few new CDs to feature this month, just in time for Christmas. And you're listening to Scots Radio. This is Freda Morrison. With me is folklorist Steve Byrne and we'll soon sort out Richie Werner for Isn't I Getting a Lot of Sleep? It has to be said, there's a new baby in the hoose. And not that long ago, there was a new baby in your hoose as well, Steve. You've done some rumblings about baby folklore as well.
Hi, just had a look through a good book that for these kind of stages in life, rites of passage kind of thing, is Margaret Bennett's For the Cradle to the Grave. And looking in Meagle in Perthshire in the 1930s, the SWRI were writing about births being times of celebrations when the proceedings were stage managed by the local handywoman, or Skilly Buddy, as she was called.
Skilly Buddy.
What's a good name, eh? You can imagine a website with that name.
Hello, I'm a Skilly Buddy.
On her arrival, she was treated to a stiff glass of whiskey to fortify her. And as soon as the bairn was born, they were plunged into a basin of cold water.
For the Skilly Buddy or the bairn?
The bairn.
Oh, sorry.
The bairn. Depends how much whiskey she'd had, maybe.
I didn't think of that.
And it wasn't for a bath, but it was to avert evil. Mm. And similarly, in the days of the peat fire, the bairn would be passed through the peat reek to avert the evil eye.
Deary me.
I think so.
Deary, deary me. Can I tell you the story about the Santa in Portnochy, the village I grew up
Richto,
in?
Richto, all right.
Okay, it is just one of the harbingers of what might be in store for me later on. There used to be about a 7-foot model of a Santa in the Windy or the post office in Portnochy. I was terrified of this model. Great big staring in coming out in the top of this big white beard and a cloak and a hood and everything. And a great big, just a staring in.
Have so you behaved yourself, Aaron?
I just stood there and stared at you. And then, God, in the post office in Portnochy. So when it came to a moment in the classroom in the primary school in Portnochy, and the teacher asked, "And far does Santa come from?" And other folks said, "Oh, to the North Pole." And I put my hand up and said, "Oh, no, 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 no. Santa comes for the post office in Portnochy." I was put out the classroom for being cheeky.
You were just reporting facts.
To this day, I still think Santa comes for the post office in Portnochy. Check out. Right, let me just check that Richie's still with us. Are you there, Richie?
Oh, I'm still here, Fida. Okay. How you doing?
Give us a wee rehearsal for your Santa bells.
Oh, hang on. Santa's coming, right?
Okay. He's been practising that all morning.
I have.
That's good. Keep it at that. Keep it at that. That's good. Okay, it's enough, Richie.
Oh, all right.
Delicately done, I would say. He's got the job.
He's a natural.
But he's still there. He's still awake. Right, there's maybe, hasn't there been a lot to smile about in Scottish Fairmen this year? Prices for milk, lamb and beef have been poor. And a wheat summer meant long and difficult hairs in a lot of the country. But on a number of occasions, large groups of farmers have been seen and heard roaring and laughing at all the trials and trackles the industry has faced. And it's our thanks to Jim Smith, the Perthshire farmer, turned stand-up comedian, who has been tacking his in-country brand of humour to village halls, Glasgow comedy clubs, and even the Edinburgh Festival. Now, Nancy Nicholson managed to get her hands on a ticket for Inouye's sell-out shows, and then went to meet him on his farm.
Come on, Ned.
We're right in God's country, in north of Perth. We're 20 minutes north of Perth. We're basically the foot of the Grampian Mountains and just at the top end of Strathmore. We're about 300 acres, 65 suckler cows and 330 breeding sheep.
Also, when I was 15, I came out and said I was going to be a chuchter. And I'm totally comfortable with that. And I resigned myself to the fact that I was going to be a farmer. So I got sent away to agricultural college at a wonderful place called Crabston up in Aberdeen. If you don't know what it's like at agricultural college, how can I put it? It's a bit like, you know Top Gun, the movie? It's a bit like that, but for tractor drivers. Aye, hello there, it's Sandy here, requesting a flyby. I'll be there in half an hour. I've got a bogey on my tail.
A lot of my routine is doing different accents, especially, you know, the Fife in Aberdeenshire and the real Perth local accent just comes from people that I grew up with. And for instance, Fife, my grandparents were from Fife, and we used to get these visitors coming up and you know, if you ken away in Kirkcaldy, and they would be talking about what's going on at the paper mill, but they'd love it up here in the Ferrum, eh? It was fantastic. It was absolutely brilliant. So that was always very humorous, so I listened very
carefully.
So
you found that funny?
Yes,
although you had your own accent.
Yeah, absolutely. Just these folk coming up from Fife, which is only, you know, 50 miles down the road. Of course, my grandparents, they never left their Fife accent, even though they spent most of their lives in Perthshire.
And were you encouraged to speak dialect as a kid?
No, my mum wanted me us to speak properly, but going to Blair in high school, and I'm very proud of her accent. But it's funny though, because I didn't think folk in Perthshire had accents. You know, it wasn't until I went to met other people from out with the area that I realised that we do have a bit of an accent. And the right Perth accent, they've got a great tendency to repeat A after everything. It's that East Coast thing. So it's like, aye, we're at the berries, the new, eh? We're just busy picking the berries, the new, and then after that we're onto the tatties, like.
And everything you're talking about is about farming, isn't it?
Well, a rural humour, because, you know, there's no point me trying to make jokes in Glasgow about Glasgow housing estates, because I just don't know anything about it. But it's about coming from the country and telling stuff about what goes on in my life.
I've been to a performance in Edinburgh, Jim, and it was obvious at once from the queue of people at the door. It was a sea of green and tweed. They were country people. They were farmers. Do other people get the humour?
I do try and explain it in a way so townspeople can get it. I think if you explain it clearly enough. But the more I go on now, I'm thinking that although I like to try and write for mainstream comedy, I could also write for farming and do kind of rural specific shows and almost have two types of comedy depending on what the audience is.
Subsidy junkies. That's another thing we're called. Farmers are called subsidy junkies. And I totally disagree. I've just got this image of a heap of us outside the Department of Agriculture at 6 a.m. going, hey, big man, gonna let us in, man. I'm pure desperate, man. And there's a pimp round the corner saying, you want to buy some Naked Acres, you know?
A farmer's life is a really solitary one. Is it difficult to make that transition from the uplands here in Perthshire on a tractor on your own all day to standing up in front of a crowd of people at night?
No, I get a real buzz from doing that humour. I do like actually just working away myself here on the farm. But yeah, it does get very lonely, and that's why I do the stand-up, because of the sheer buzz of when you get folk, thankfully, laughing at your jokes.
There's no posters on Facebook the Welsh farmers put up. For every lamb you take to a market, you're now losing £30 a head. Now, I'm not the brightest, obviously, but now when a lamb dies, I'm thinking, oh, well, there's £30 saved. See, this year at tupping time, I'm not going to put any tups out at all. I'll save myself a bloody fortune.
You're able even to look back on farming disasters with humour.
Yes, right. Once I've had a while to think about it.
Once you've had time to recover.
Yes, aye. It's not funny when prices are down, but it's just such a rich stream of material, and folk totally get it. Folk have to let off steam. So when you do it, even if when we used to do it in like a young farmer sketch or that, farmers loved it because it's like a relief. It's just a lot of the best humour is about tragic stuff.
So where next then? You've done the Edinburgh Fringe. You've starred in village halls. Where next?
Town halls.
Town halls.
I want to pursue my farming, and I feel I've still a lot to give in comedy. Like, I'd love to write a sitcom or a sketch show or something. It's just trying to balance it with home here, because I love my farming, but it's fine for a winter's night, you know, getting away down to Glasgow to the bright lights. I do enjoy it.
So I tell folk from the town, if you don't know what the Highland Show is, it's a bit like Disneyland for chuchters, but without the white knuckle rides. Mind you, I've had a few white knuckle rides at the Highland Show. And I think the society should do a Highland Show advent calendar. So this big burly guy, 6'3", comes down at 6 a.m. in his underpants, opening the first window, you know, and it's like a picture of a queue in the bridge or something, you know. And then the final picture would be a nativity scene, it'd be a right nativity scene of a young farmer face down in the hay with three shepherds round him, you know.
Perthshire farmer Jim Smith speaking to Nancy Nicholson, and I would say Jim has a definite future for that diversification scheme. Congratulations, we're chuckling away here. Mayor Music, this song for a Fife duo called the Coal Town Daisies. This is for their new album, This Old House, and this is The Little Bird.
From the sun to the sea, it's been hard in times of need. Go in the world. Don't give up, my little bird. No, no. When it's dark and it's real and you don't know, take it slowly from the ground. Let your wings create your sound. When the line forms and you're trying to forget, think of me when the time comes. From the fire, my little bird. From the sun to the sea, there's a place for all you'll be. May you rest now on the sand, and your heart will hold your.
Down Daisies for their new album, This Old House. There's some lovely songs in this album, and twa really good voices in Vivian Byrne and Lindsay Mutter. And we were just saying, Steve, it's lovely to hear flashes of the Fife accent coming through there. Yeah. It's nae aye just mid-Atlantic. And a lot of subtle arrangements produced by themselves. Summies. Poet Stella Sutherland was one of the most important writers of her generation in Shetland, turning her hand as readily to English as to her native tongue, and happy to develop her ideas in prose as well as poetry. In her writing, she addressed the big issues of life, but she was just as likely to find something thoughtful to say about knitting or neighbourliness or sheep. And she left a rich legacy of work. And Mary Blance pays tribute to a loved and respected friend with this poem, Fae Stella, about Christmas, called Da Nacht at Christ Was Born.
The night at Christ was born. A lass was gaun to cry, to Bethlehem cam, weary and makin main, and fand they were nae wy to lay her doon, for a' the beds was ta'en. The lodging mistress said the buyer would hit a diddum till the morn. There, twa clean windlings spread athin an empty stall, God's bairn was born. A pretty whig wi' a star athin her brew was tied up at a wark, and in by at a barn wi' sleepy peasters hains up at a bark. When a' was o'er and done, the midder's een drooped in sweet relief. Joseph sat wondering on this marvel that was nearly past belief. Then suddenly, the loft was filled with light and singing fae aboon. As pretty dancers shift, sae moved the singers at a heavenly tune. And when they a' were gane, doon the lang hallie gate the shepherds came, wondering what it might mean, and een was carrying a tongue of lamb. They came in trow and bent afore the infant in a glood of light. Into themselves, without a doubt they kent, hundreds of years would hear about this night. The night that Christ was born, by Stella Sutherland.
Mary Blance, the night that Christ was born. This is Alistair Fraser and Paul Machlis for their album Legacy of the Scottish Fiddle. Alistair Fraser and Paul Machlis for their album Legacy of the Scottish Fiddle. And now I think it's time we had a little bit of a rehearsal again. Richie, can we hear some near Santa bells to see if you're still there?
Uh-huh. Okay. Sure, hang on. Go on. Here we go, this go one.
Thank you. Thank you, Richie.
That's plenty.
I shall now say what I was going to say.
You
can again go far into the Christmas... Thank you.
Welcome.
You can again go far into the Christmas theme without thinking about food. It has to be said, some of us think about food a lot of the time, nae just at Christmas. Some of us div. Nae saying far, just saying. Our resident Rummel has been looking into some of the food customs of the season, fit of your Rummel.
Oh, I'm not sure about that link. Can you get that's half close together?
It was the phrasing and the pausing.
Well, As is often the case with food traditions that we've touched on the programme, a lot of the best recorded eans are up in the Northern Islands and in Shetland. Mm. And at Yule, that would be the best of the winter celebrations for them. For your breakfast, you would have veal, mutton or beef. Can you imagine that?
Breakfast.
And the better off hooses would have a goose. Mm. And it turns out the goose was actually a long tradition there. They were raised in huge numbers and the delicacy was made with the skin of the gooseneck. And Abdi got a slice
skin.
Of it. The skin of the gooseneck. And you always had to pluck the geese on the flowing tide. That was a superstition. You could mak things out of the hail goose, like a good needle could be made for the goose's jaw, and you'd mak puddings and tripe for the bird, and you'd have stuffed goose for Christmas Day. And on New Year's Day, then folk would visit every room in the house. Hens, geese and horse were unlucky to meet. And sheep and cattle were lucky.
And the hoose.
I think it's written a bit oddly.
I'm kind of trying to visualise this as you're speaking. You went through.
I got
the
my pauses wrong there. You can.
Yeah. Okay, we'll think about that then.
But one of the things I came across on my way in the day, I was trying to find something seasonal. A replacement for a mince pie would be a thing called an ekelfechen tart.
I've been sitting looking at these ekelfechen tarts for a long time,
really?
And I'm hungry.
I've never had one, so I thought we would give them a wee shot.
Right,
give
a shot, what do you care about ekelfechen tarts, and apart from the fact
well,
they come from ekelfechen?
These are particularly for a Wheelkent shortbread maker, and I didn't care an awful lot about them. They're vegetarian, and they're in the shape of a mince pie, and they're mostly... kind of winter fruit, you can Christmassy fruits,
nice.
Sultanas and I think. So you'd normally heat them up, but we'll heat them.
Okay. Is that the finish of your stories, your food stories, Born there?
Well, it was just, this is after speaking on the radio with my mouth full.
It sounded pretty good to me.
Well, hey,
you should
edit
that often.
I was just tickled by the fact that, as I say, it's a Wheelkent shortbread company, so they've put the name of the thing in six languages, which means that you get Vier Luxus Ekelfechen Törtchen in German and Quattro Tortine di Lusso Ekelfechen.
You could almost pass for an Italian as I sit and look at you.
Is it screened in Scots, Steve?
Yeah, isn't it? I'm going to write to them.
Write to them?
Far of the Aberlour.
Stiff letter. Strongest possible terms.
Quite right.
Right. Here I go. I had the pleasure of meeting up with, you know, our most renowned chefs and food writers in Scotland, Wendy Barry, through the Good Food Guide the other day. And speaking to her in her own kitchen, as she made my mother's famous Christmas trifle. No. Fit why is Wendy Barry making my mother's famous Christmas trifle? Listen on, and we join Wendy in her kitchen near Aberdour. Welcome to Wendy Barry's kitchen. And we're going to try and make, a sherry trifle, Christmas sherry trifle. In the bowl we have already, Fit, just to save time, Wendy.
Absolutely.
Fit have we got in there?
We've got 3 egg yolks, tablespoon, old-fashioned tablespoon, corn flour, and some nice brown sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to give them a wee whisk together. And behind me on the stove, I've got some scalding hot cream ready to go.
Half a hot cream.
So just give it a wee whisk to start with.
Whisk it up.
Get it nice and smooth.
Right, let's go back to the beginning. When you're doing that, this is our based on a recipe for a book.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the book first.
You'll have had your tea, and it's Treasure Tastes. You'll have had your tea, Treasure Tastes.
Uh-huh.
And Visit Scotland put out the word to get lots of people to send in their recipes.
Mm-hmm.
Bairns, old folk, grandparents, grannies, uncles, anybody, to send in their recipes and their memory. Mm-hmm. And that's the important thing.
The memory, the story.
The memory, the story, the backstory.
Food
absolutely.
And stories.
Absolutely. The tales from the fireside, just to get the idea of why they picked it. Because you remember food, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
The smell, the sound, the sizzle.
It's emotion, you know? And food and memories and stories arguing together.
Yeah.
And this particular recipe was, Shelley Spear for the Three Chimneys, who is the food commissioner this year, said, Frieda, go in and send in your mum's sherry trifle recipe, because she loved my mum's cooking.
Well, I keep proofreading this book. You know, I did 4 proofreads before it went to print,
mm-hmm.
and I always shed a tear, which sounds really cheesy, but, you know, they were just such broad tales. They were so touching, from wartime, from hay gathering, berry picking out at the berries, having a piece in the field with your uncle, going brambling. They're just such lovely stories.
Sherry trifles, fipper knocky,
yeah,
that sort of thing. Collecting turkeys, of course. And we have now got
the yolks, the sugar, corn flour, uh-huh. and we're going to pop in the scalding cream. So, really hot cream.
Scalding cream?
Yeah. So that will cook the eggs.
Okay. Oh, I see. Right.
And it will thicken.
Uh-huh. I mind on watching my mum doing this quite a few times during the year as well. No, just at Christmas, because uh-huh. she was just uh-huh. half a needed it.
And while you're talking, I'm going to put this back on and uh-huh. just watch it awfully carefully. Because uh-huh. otherwise it will catch. But you want it just... I'm a bit of a whoosh, really. I don't like to serve raw eggs, you see. So I'm always a bit... I like to just have it a wee bit thicker.
It's not a good idea to serve.
So I just give this a wee... Just till I feel it catching. Then I stick it straight back in there again.
Okay.
So I'll bring it over in a minute.
So tell me about some of the other stories in there.
Oh... They're grand. They really are, bro. There's, I'll just pop this down here. There's, there's lovely nut fingers, which is a bit of a kind of macaroon thing. Mm-hmm. And it's from the Isle of Arran. And the lassies were out in the fields and the mums mm-hmm. would come with a big basket and a gingham cloth and they'd want to know what was under it, you know, and... What was it today? Was it scones? Was it cookies? But what they really wanted was the nut fingers. It was nut finger day was the favourite day. Now this is lovely. This is ready. And we're going to let it cool a little bit. But we'll have to just make sure it's okay. Uh-huh. You're going to make sure it's okay?
Am I going to taste it?
Of course.
Oh, this is... You see, I remember just watching everything that she was doing, hoping that I would get little tasties. Oh, so that's my one.
Absolutely.
I thought you were going to give me your spoon.
Oh, no, I wasn't doing a double dip there. I was. Oh, nice wee custard.
Wendy.
So
you're good.
Stick it there. That's mm-hmm. fine. Mm-hmm. I'll take that for you.
Thank you very much. Oh, I was kind of hard on top in case there was another.
Oh, see, you might get another one. Oh, don't worry. I've got more spoons. It'll be all right. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do now is just leave that there. Keep it nice and uh-huh. off to do the next bit. So this is... When you do a trifle, you've got to use homemade things. So mm-hmm. you've got to make your own custard. You've got to make your own cake.
She always did.
Your mum would.
She always did.
But some people, you know, you go to a friend's house and you just knew if it was a bit of bought cake in there because it had that kind of real sweet, sickly sweet.
I do that.
So we've got just an ordinary sponge here. Just a plain sponge. And I could have used... you know, cupcakes. Mm-hmm. But this way you can just cut it up in fingers and you mm-hmm. can, it's delicious with a bit of spread of jam and a bit of coconut on top. You can use it for other things too. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to cut some of these up. If you've got, you know, if you've got a big dish, you make more. If you've got a shallow dish, mm-hmm. you know.
Speaking of it, I brought my mum's sherry trifle dish or bowl. An antique now.
That's lovely. Did your mum ever do it with Swiss roll?
Yep.
That was nice as well, around the edge, yes.
Yep. I think she actually made her own Swiss roll as well.
Of course, I'm sure she did, yes. Your mum sounds a great place to go and visit and have your tea. You know, she would say, come away in and have your tea.
I did. And I was doing ham at times. I couldn't even get near the table because there's too many folk in the kitchen. And folk that I hadn't seen for years think, oh, we just thought we'd pop in to see if what your mum was making.
That's nice.
And Christmas Day especially. There's times that there wasn't enough chairs or cutlery for folk. There were so many folk arrived just unexpected or whatever. But the funny thing was as well, Mandy, I set an extra place at the table.
Oh.
And I do that. I'm doing that as well now.
Uh-huh.
It's a funny habit to get into, just in case somebody arrives. Mm-hmm. She says, oh, you never came, so I was going to come. Mm. And there was an extra space. And focus it. Say, why is there a... Well, I said, didn't ask. She's like...
Well, I've been testing 50 recipes for this book, almost 50 recipes. And I honestly can say everyone is fantastic.
It's a cracker.
Absolute cracker. Just fabby. And they're now favourites in our household. My husband was uh-huh. very happy for me to make the custard creams and the stovies and all the dishes, the steak pie, because they're so good. Uh-huh. The last time I was asked to proof a book, it was lovely salad recipes, and there was about 40 of them, and my kids were teenagers, and we couldn't eat it all. So just they came round 9 at a time after school, because there was all this food to eat. I didn't want anything wasted, so just opened the doors.
As bad as my mum.
There we are. A little bit more, I think.
Aye.
And then that's our nice base in the bottom.
As you're doing this, give us an idea of some of the other recipes that's in there.
Oh, well, we've got scotch pie. We've got a lovely scotch pie from a Fifer. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, your football pie is part of the heritage. We've got, we've got cranachan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cranachan.
Absolutely.
And crowdy.
Absolutely. Oh, we've got crowdy with smoked trout. And the chap went fishing with his three uncles. So obviously the three brothers in the boat. Uh-huh. And he tells us the name of the boat. I'm trying to think what the name of the boat is, but it's like Peggy Ann or something. You'll have to see the book to find out the name of the boat.
Crowdy and trout, that sounds fantastic.
And so they took it back to the aunties, and the aunties cooked the trout, uh-huh, and a bit of crowdy and a bit of potato scone. And that was... It's good, isn't it?
So how did that come from?
That was somewhere up in... That was up in Shetland.
Shetland,
the newest. Right. Yes, up there.
So you've got the sponges in here.
Sponges in there, right. Absolutely. And nice generous helping of jam in there. Now, we'll spoon on some of the fruit.
Spoon,
yes.
Spoon on some of the fruit.
And
you've got the sherry. I can smell the sherry.
So we dod on now.
I dod. Right.
And of course, all the juice gets nicely soaked up in there.
And of course,
is that a big enough dod? Is that muckle?
We'll put that, the rest of it in as well.
Yeah?
Just put that in. Put it in.
There you go. Now, this is double cream.
Right.
I'm not a fan of whipping cream. It's a bit watery. Uh-huh. Double cream's a bit of body.
Now, do you put in any sugar in
it? No, I don't. Do you want some?
My mum did. She put in a little bit of caster sugar.
Yeah, we can put a little bit of caster.
A little bit. Not much.
Soft brown.
Soft brown, aye. But do you think that cooking something like this or making something like this just gets you into the Christmas mood and the Christmas spirit?
Oh, yes.
That looks so bonny. Oh, I'm putting my creams going on. That's it.
And we've got some nice toasted almonds here.
Toasted almonds to go on the top. Wendy, I can't but thank you. This has been an absolute delight to be with you.
So come back to Fife again.
I will.
Haste you back.
I will. Food writer and chef Wendy Barry. And that new recipe book is called You'll Have Had Your Tea, Treasured Tastes of Scotland, published by Visit Scotland. Watch out for it. It's a cracker. This is Anna and Marit again, the Red Poppy from my album Best Day. We'll be right back.
Anna Murid for the Red Poppy for their album Best Day. And it just so happens that this is a good day because after I left Wendy in her kitchen, she gave me the trifle in my mum's bowl, in my very mum's bowl, that I have teen a' the way for their kitchen in Aberdour to share with you uns. You, Steve, and yon Richie, seeing as how you're both dads. Richie's a new dad and Christmas is a with a wee baby. Now, for I kind of dish out the trifle for you, Beth, or for me and A. Advice, what advice can you give? You are now Richie's dad mentor.
Daddy mentor.
Daddy
Chings
mentor.
Oh, the pressure, eh? Well, I wouldn't have claimed to be an expert, but I'll tell you what, rule number one.
Aye?
Dinna drop the bairn.
Oh, really?
Okay. I'll tell you, see as they get older, they get gay wriggly.
Is that right? Oh.
But I'll tell you, in terms of advice, and I'm sure a lot of folk would identify with this, we were aye getting bits of advice for the midwives and the nurses and the folk and the grannies and the aunties and whatever. And a few folk have ended up saying this, day footworks for yous.
Aye.
And there's loads of information out there these days that you can get.
Listen, I'm making enough a splutter of this. I've splutered our Richie's tablecloth.
Oh, no. Hey, you're doing the washing then.
Try that.
Well, I dare say they'll have a washing on every day now. So.
Actually. Funny, you've been here before, Mr. Byrne.
Listen, the viewings. Well, I didn't suppose Richie started singing lullabies, but have you started singing lullabies to the Matilda?
Well, lullabies and certainly.
A mess. Oh, sorry about
that. Oh, for goodness sake.
I'm sorry.
Jeez. Oh,
sorry, splutered.
Any of the best. Shall I just continue here?
Enjoy yourselves.
Any of the best Kent songs, of course, that you would sing the bairns was actually an advertising jingle way back in the day, doing in the Borders. And of course, was Ali Bally B for the boy Robert Coulthard. Well, Ewan McVicar has done a lot of research because there was a bit of a suspicion that it was something else. It was a song that had somehow suddenly come into being, and loads of folk kent the song out of the place. And it turns out that Robert Coulthard had actually made Coulthard's Candy, and that had been an advertising jingle of sorts that had gone around the kind of Borders and further afield. So he'd gone down to the Borders Archive and Local History Centre in Selkirk and looked up this fella there and found out that he was in the Gala Shield Census in 1870 and all sorts of things. The reason that I'm getting to that is because I got given a wee gift a couple of months ago by my pal, Francie Devine, who thought, I ken somebody that has a sweet tooth, and he spotted this. And it's Ali Bally B's Coulthard's Candy in a wee in a linen sack. Scotland's sweetie, you've sung the song the her hale life, now sook the sweetie. Boiled, hard and sooky, handmade in copper pans. Let's picture a wee laddie in a check shirt in the front. Hi, ma, gonna geese a wee bobby. And it's great, they're wee kind of brown sweeties about the size of a 10-pence piece. They probably brought your teeth out together. But
we're woolly language.
Exactly. So they're made in Lochgelly, in a firm in Lochgelly.
Katie Birdie as well.
Aye, Katie Birdie had a coup black and white about the moo. That is a popular in at the changing table at the minute. And the variants of that, hi Jenny Cockley, come on, cuddle me, I'll give you a cup of tea, keep your belly warm. Katie Birdie, turns out, is actually about 500 year old. As a tune and as a person.
She's weird and well.
She's weird and well. But you maybe recognise the tune as it's the tune of Worry at the Sherry Muir, Bald John at Innistuir. And apparently the tune gangs even further back. It's in some of the manuscripts for the 1600s. And it may even have been played at the Battle of Pinky Cluch near Musselburgh.
I kent that.
In 1537.
I kent that about Pinky... No, I didn't. What happened at Pinky Cluch?
Well, you can remember Black Friday. It was a catastrophic defeat for Scotland at Pinky Cluch to the point where it was called Black Saturday.
You come up with some of the most stunning pieces of rubbish.
Useless rubbish.
But we're neen the war of that. Neen the war of that. And as you tuck it, have a wee...
I haven't tried this yet. I was busy. I was on the radio there. Did you hear me?
Did you? Were you speaking? Yes, here's some of that. That's my mum's Christmas trifle.
Oh, I think so.
Isn't that a cracker?
It's light as a feather.
And Wendy is just doing it proud. And we were speaking there, and we've enjoyed the Ecclefechan tarts as well. We're really team with them. And we're thinking of asking Wendy to be our programme chef, because she just sounds... And Richie says, would you come in and make her dinners for us and our suppers and things?
Sounds good to me.
We could try. We could promise our fame, maybe no fortune, but we could promise our fame. Infamous. Wendy, thank you for this. It's really appreciated. We can't get it out to Richie yet because We're in another room and he's in a cupboard, but he's going to appreciate it as well. Did you not see that there was great big holes out of it before you got stuck in it? Richie was at it before.
I had a wee sample.
You had a wee sample.
Either summer or Rika's sherry coming off of that as well.
We've got the sherry.
It's a broad Rika.
We've got the sherry. But it's comfy. It's a story. I think I've got time to tell the story of why the trifle was in this book with the story. And the sherry bottle, of course, would arrive in the house for Christmas to put the sherry in the trifle right in Pornocchi. But it also was, when the fit was left over, it was taken by my father across to the bakehouse, for the turkeys were going ruined in the oven because they didn't shut off the oven.
Right.
It was Christmas in the bakehouse. And the big turkeys that couldn't go into folks' ovens because you just had little ovens in the days were put in the oven to cook. So Abdi would congregate in the bakehouse on Christmas morning and folk would come with it was left of their sherry bottles, see, for the trifle. And the whole place smelt of new baked bread and turkeys and and sherry. And Abdi was half a happy, funnily enough. So that's my memories at Christmas. Turkeys, really big, huge, massive turkeys got ruined in the oven and folk pouring out if it was left of the sherry bottle for the sherry trifle. Right, we're going to leave you for another year and another Christmas. And we'll leave you with, you know, my favourite readers and companions. You've yet to hear his skills in diddling, that's for another year. This is Gordon Hay, the Longside, near Peter Head, reading the Christmas story for his translation of the New Testament into Doric. Finishing with music, the CD collection, part of a book, Cad, The Wayfaring Strangers, by Fiona Ritchie and Doug Orr. The tunes are played by Timothy Cummins. He starts with the Wayfaring Strangers tune. And, of course, Fiona will be with us in the new year on this very programme, so we'll look forward to that. And all that remains is for me and Steve and Richie to, and the Growing family, of course, here. Why? At Scots Radio. You're still awake, Richie, are you?
I'm still here.
As it remains is for us to wish you a happy Christmas and hear the Christmas that you want. And here's to hope and peace o'er all the earth. Say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Blythe Yule.
Blythe Yule. This is Gordon Hay with a Christmas story.
A Gospel of Luke, chapter 2. Now it come about at that time, the Emperor Augustus gied out an edict that the whole world should pay tax. This was when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And elke man gied at least ain toon. And said Joseph, get up from Nazareth in Galilee, to David's town called Bethlehem in Judea, to be taxed. You see, he was a David's folk. And he took with him his lass Mary, her that was expecting her firstborn. When they were in Bethlehem, her time came, and she had a wee loony, her allest son. She whopped him up in clouts, and laid him at the forestall, because there was nae room for them at the lodging. Now, there was thereabout some shepherds out in the parks watching over their sheepies, when an angel of the Lord came to them, and the Lord's glory was shining all round them. They were terrified. But the angel says to them, dinna be feared. I face good news tell you, and to all the folk. As for a day, in David's town, your Saviour was born, Christ the Lord. And this will be your sign. You'll find the bairnie whoppet up in clouts and lying in a forestall. Ah, at once there was a muckle call of shungy of the heavenly host, singing God's praises. Glory to God in highest heaven, and on earth peace. Guid well to our folk. After the angels had gone away back to heaven, a shepherd said to lean another, come on. Woman had strach to Bethlehem and see for ourselves what the Lord has telt us about. Say a wa the hell that a guid lick and fan Mary and Joseph with a bairnie lying in the forestall. And when they saw him, they telt what they themselves had been telt about his bairnie. And a' it heard them were dumbfoonert with what the shepherds were saying. But Mary took into her breastie if it was said, and mind about it for long. And a wag of the shepherds, singing God's praises for all they had seen and heard. It had all happened just as they'd been dealt.